Welcome back to Horoscope Witch. It's Mal. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the February podcast sermon. I'm pretty excited for this one because we're going to be chatting about the upcoming Mercury retrograde in Aquarius. And honestly, I'm really feeling really intuitively that this Mercury retrograde is juicy. Like, in a good way. I don't know. I'm kind of excited for this one in a weird way. Like, I know. It's, like, kind of weird to be excited for Mercury retrograde because who looks forward to Mercury retrograde? Especially me, because I have Mercury in Aquarius. So this Mercury retrograde is happening in my sign. But I don't know. There's just this really big feeling when it comes to February that the places that this Mercury retrograde could lead us, specifically the internal places where this Mercury retrograde could potentially take us, feels like really, it feels like a leveling up. It kind of feels like a breakthrough. It feels like 3 weeks of investigation. And at the end of it, I think there's going to be something really magical in a weird way. So I don't know. I'll get into that more as we go on. But I just had to share my initial excitement about our Mercury retrograde talk. I will say, if you are a new listener, hi, I'm Mal. Thank you so much for finding me. I'm an astrologer, tarot reader, tarot teacher, and an intuitive. What the monthly sermons are a monthly message that I channel intuitively from my guides. I also look at the astrology of the month, and sometimes I even throw a few tarot cards in there just to kind of bring the story full circle. But most of the messages today kind of just come from my own meditations, my guides, what my guides have been telling me the past couple weeks. I typically will marinate with the monthly message for at least a week, if not 2 weeks, before I sit down and I actually record. And that's because I really am kind of feeling into the energy of the month ahead. I want to be the best translator as I possibly can. translator meaning like me translating what I feel the message is from spirit, translating that to you, whoever is listening. So yeah, that's kind of what I do here behind the scenes. And one more thing, too, you already know this if you've been listening forever, but again, just in case you're new. Also, one thing I wanted to say, the reason I've been kind of addressing potential new listeners lately is because it occurred to me that maybe if you were a new listener and you hopped on here, it might be like a little bit weird because I sometimes feel like I address my following so directly, and I feel like I address my listeners as though they were listening from the beginning. And I'm trying to be more mindful that not everybody has been listening from the beginning, and I want you to be able to hop in whenever you want to, if that makes sense. So that's why I'm kind of addressing any new listeners here for a second. But anyways, long story short, even though this is the February 2021 sermon, you can listen to this at any point you want. You can save it for mid-February. You can save it for February 1st on the dot if I get it out in time. Sometimes they're a little bit late. You can save it for 10 years from now. You know, whenever you feel called to come to this sermon, you do that. You know, come to it when you intuitively feel aligned. I always set that intention that no matter what the timing is, when you come to the podcast, you'll resonate regardless, you know. So even though we're talking about some timely astrological happenings, that's still okay. The message will still kind of be, what do they call it in the business world? What's that word? Evergreen. The message is evergreen content. Yeah. So that's all I'll say here. Quick life update. I know you guys are like, oh my God, not another life update. Please, God, no. Just really, really quickly, I just wanted to mention that I know the podcast content has been a little bit slow lately. I've kind of only been averaging maybe one podcast a month lately in the past couple months. And typically, it's actually my ideal to come out with 2 to 3 episodes per month. 3 is kind of my max. 2 is kind of my sweet spot. And the reason I've been slowing down a little bit is pretty exciting because there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff going on that I can't tell you about. No, I'm kidding. I won't be like that. I won't be like that annoying YouTube makeup artist who's like, I'm doing a collab and it's really exciting, but I can't tell you guys about it. What's actually happening behind the scenes, I'll just say it. The logo is changing and I am rebranding, which is kind of cringy because, again, like, if you know me and you've been talking to me personally for the past 6 months, you've probably heard me complain about the fact that, like, I need to have a brand. You've probably heard me complain about this. Like, there was just, like, so much resistance for a while with, like, who I am as a business person, who I am as a small business owner, owning that, like, no matter what, like, you are your brand when you own a business and all of this shit. Okay, so there's a lot of resistance to that for a while. And also, I'm just now getting over that. And my manager, Libby, no, I'm kidding. I do not. I'm being facetious. Libby is not my manager, but I do not have a manager, believe me. But Libby, who is my kind of like my business logo extraordinaire artist, friend, witchy friend. She is the one who drew the current Horoscope Witch logo. Me and her are doing a lot of stuff, mostly her. She's like, what are you doing, bitch? I'm the one who's drawing the new logo. Me and her are doing a lot of, like, behind the scenes stuff for, like, the brand and the logo. So that's why it's been a little slow here. I am hesitant to put out a mass amount of content right before certain things are going to change. However, after Mercury retrograde finishes up, probably in March, there's going to be like a death and rebirth here, and then we'll get on with more content, okay? And then we'll get on with like more interviews. I have a whole list of people that I want to interview in 2021 that I'm excited about. And yeah, and overall, I think I've just needed a little bit of time to just pull back a little, rest some more. I've been really busy with clients lately, and I've been so, so, so grateful for that. Thank you so much for booking with me. I actually love focusing most of my energy on client work, but then when you have more client work, then I'm figuring I need to give more time for myself to rest because I literally need it, and then I don't have as much time to work on the podcast. But, you know, it all balances out. It really does. So that's what's going on, my friends. So that's the update. Expect a death and rebirth coming in March. I actually think you all will really like it, the change that's coming. The format of this podcast won't change, as far as I know. Like, it's still going to be me, monthly sermons, a couple interviews a month, hopefully, our book talks. I'm hoping to put out even more content about astrology and highly sensitive people problems, all of that stuff. So, like, the meat of the podcast won't change. It's a little bit more, like, the vision of the podcast is kind of changing, which I'm excited about. I hope you are too. And that's about it, my friends. So that's the life update, the monthly life update from Mal. And now should we chat a little bit more about Mercury retrograde this month? So Mercury goes retrograde. Is that the right term? God, I always do this to myself every Mercury retrograde. And then you like see a tweet from like a really like from, I don't know, like I feel like every Mercury retrograde people like astrologers start tweeting like, oh my God, I hate it when people say Mercury goes retrograde and it's really Mercury stations retrograde. Or like I always forget which one it is. I believe it's just Mercury is in retrograde. I think that's the correct terminology. So if we're being grammatically correct, Mercury is in retrograde. I'm going to say that the whole podcast and I'm going to be wrong, so forgive me. But Mercury is in retrograde pretty much the entire month of February. Technically, Mercury stations retrograde on January 30th, 2021 at 10:52 a.m. specifically, according to my witch's date book of 2021. And from there, Mercury will be in retrograde and will stay station direct on February 20th, 2021 at around 7:52 p.m. But Mercury will still be in its shadow for about a week there. So I think we can just say that pretty much the entire month of February, we're going to have some Mercury retrograde vibes, right? And I don't want you to be scared. We've talked about this a million times that Mercury retrograde is not something we need to be anxious about, hyper-focusing on. You know, I'm actually, it's the meat of this sermon's message this month in a really powerful way. So I hope I can reframe it in a nice way for you this month. Now, what's interesting is that we just entered the air age, right? We just had our, in end of December 2020, we had our great conjunction in Aquarius, right? Saturn and Jupiter met in Aquarius, began a new 200-year cycle, and a bunch of other cycles. There's a whole bunch of cycles that began, you know, at the end of 2020, marking the new age of air. And I found that to be interesting because all of the Mercury retrogrades of 2021 are in air signs. So we have, again, the one right now in February 2021 is in Aquarius. The one coming up in June 2021 is in Gemini. And then the one in October 2021 is in Libra. So that's pretty interesting because I think we're kind of like almost adjusting to this new air age in these Mercury retrograde cycles in a weird way. And I was thinking too about just Mercury in Aquarius in general. And again, I have Mercury in Aquarius? Yeah. So I have Mercury in Aquarius natally. And I feel like the shadow side of Mercury in Aquarius, at least for me, is, I'm not necessarily saying this if this is not you, but my shadow side is Hermione Granger, like, with my Mercury in Aquarius. Like, it is, it's like kind of a little bit, it can be a little know-it-all-ish, a little teacher's pet. That's kind of the shadow side. But I will say, I think it's a profound gift for Mercury to be in Aquarius in general, and especially for Mercury in Aquarius natives, because I think sometimes we can say shit that people weren't necessarily ready to hear, you know, but we needed to hear, they needed to hear, or like there was like something about, there's something about the way we communicate because it's kind of future focused. I think we can really see things in a very zoomed out perspective. And thus, I think that sometimes leads us to maybe making some statements that other people might not be ready for, right? And one of my clients actually was talking about her Mercury in Aquarius, and she said something like, Mercury in Aquarius always has like the good ideas. And I kind of replied, and I was like, I kind of agree, but sometimes I think Mercury in Aquarius has the idea that no one's ready for yet. You know, like we're almost, sometimes we're too early with what we're thinking, you know, to the point where nobody gets it. Like, it's like you're in a group project and you're like, I think we should do this and this is the vision. And everybody's just like looking at you with like crickets are going off in the background and they're just like, okay. Like, you know, and it's just because we're a little bit ahead. We're a little bit ahead in the future, right? Now, that's kind of what Mercury in Aquarius kind of does in a natal chart setting, right? Very generally. We could go into Mercury in Aquarius natally way more in depth, but that's kind of like the general vibe, right? Comment below, message me if you have Mercury in Aquarius and you get what I'm saying. But then let's kind of zoom out and talk about Mercury in Aquarius in more of like an esoteric way. And something I was thinking about was the key phrase for Aquarius is I know. That's really profound. Like, I know. And so what happens when Mercury in Aquarius is retrograde? It's almost like the key phrase becomes, I don't know. And I think, interestingly, when there's a lot of Aquarius energy in the sky, slash maybe even if there's a lot of Aquarius energy in someone's natal chart, not knowing kind of becomes almost like a little bit like dangerous or anxiety inducing or just a little bit unsafe. I think sometimes people with heavy Aquarius energy don't feel entirely comfortable sometimes being like, I don't know, or they just don't feel entirely comfortable being in the space of I don't know, right? Just because their key phrase is I know, you know, that's their sort of life force, you know, like that's the sort of music of their vibration. It's I know. So to not know, we kind of have to invite in a new energy, and we kind of have to think about how we can become more comfortable not knowing, right? And this is kind of something that we've talked about a lot in the past year on any of my sermons. A big theme has been not knowing. A big theme has been taking pressure off of the timing of things, etc., etc. And I think there's something about this Mercury retrograde in Aquarius that really does kind of turn our attention to all of the things that we don't know in sort of like a humbling way, if that makes any sense. And sometimes there are, I think there's like so many times where we have to kind of humble our own selves and just be like, I don't know, right? Like even the practice of saying, I don't know, as a Mercury in Aquarius native is therapeutic in a way. I've tried to like make a bigger point in just in like saying that more, like being more comfortable just being, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. Like if someone asks you a question and you just don't know, I don't know, here's what it could be, but I don't know. I found it to be, like, we can grow actually more from that place of I don't know, right? But sometimes heavy Aquarius energy, it's a little bit like, oh, that I don't know kind of feels unsafe. Or like it feels a lot safer to be in the I know. I know what's going on. I know what's coming. I know the answer to the question, right? And again, I think this Mercury retrograde in Aquarius is going to put us in that space of maybe saying, I don't know. I didn't have the answer like I thought I did. Right? I actually wasn't seeing the situation as clearly as I thought I was, right? And isn't that so Mercury retrograde, right? No matter what sign Mercury is retrograding in, I think we're always going to have maybe some sort of experience, just because of the nature of Mercury. We might have an experience during any Mercury retrograde where we're kind of going back over the past, or we're revisiting, reorganizing, recalibrating, rebranding. You know, there is just something about Mercury retrograde that brings up all that we did not see initially, all that we did not know before this moment. Right now, the message when it comes to the month is a lot about resistance, actually. That's what I was kind of feeling intuitively. And I don't know if I should talk about resistance first or the card. Let's actually go to the card, and then we'll go into resistance. The card that represents Mercury in Aquarius, according to the Order of the Golden Dawn, is the Six of Swords. And if you're familiar with tarot, if you can just like imagine the Six of Swords, imagine, you know, your good old Rider-Waite-Smith Six of Swords. If you're not familiar with the tarot, this card depicts, I like to kind of think of them as a family. It's sort of like this family of three. And they're actually on this rowboat. And most of the card is water. And it's sort of like this family is rowing away from something. You know, they're seeking asylum, or they're going to a safer place. The way that the people are sort of positioned in the boat, their body language is kind of hunched over and turned away from us, and they're kind of like draped in blankets. We can't really see their faces, which kind of gives me the impression that like there is some kind of maybe like crisis or just like escape going on. But maybe that's the storyteller in me. Like I always kind of want to assign a story to the cards to kind of help me remember them. But here's the thing. When we really apply the Six of Swords to our life, we're not necessarily talking about a literal escape, or I can't say ever, but 99% of the time the Six of Swords is not talking about like a literal move or like a literal physical shift, right? Because it's a swords card, we're talking about the mental space, right? We're talking about the mind shifting into a new realm. And what the Six of Swords has become for me is this card that speaks to the magic of becoming aware of something. You know, we've all been there, like that magical moment where awareness comes, you know, like, oh, that's why I started that fight with my partner, you know, like that's why I picked a fight with my mom, you know, like that just that moment you're like, oh, that's why I did that. Or I don't know, like, you know, when you're like thinking about, you know, past relationships or past mistakes or like things that you fucked up in or whatever. And or is that just me? You know, when you're like laying in bed at night, it's like 2 a.m. You're like you're going through every single thing you've ever done wrong in your life. I know we all do this, right? There's just this moment of awareness, right, that comes. You're like, oh, that's why I did that. Oh, that's why I behaved in that way. It's just this ultimate awareness. It's this card that really, really speaks to what happens when we do become aware of something. We then have a choice of what to do with this new information, right? Like when we become aware of something, we have the choice to change, to do something with this information and change, or we have the choice not to, right? For some reason, the example of like being like lactose intolerant is coming to mind. I have no idea why this is coming to mind. Is there someone listening who has this problem? Like they know they're lactose intolerant. Like they've become aware of that for some way. Maybe it was like a food allergy test or whatever. But like, and you know your life would, like your digestion and like everything would be better if dairy was removed from your life. But like, you know, you're still like making the choice to have it. Like that's just like a general example of this kind of phenomenon of when we fucking know we're conscious now, we became aware and now we're conscious that this thing is not good anymore. This is not working anymore. But we still do it, right? That's very much the Six of Swords to me. It's kind of the option now to now move with this newfound awareness, to do something with this newfound awareness. And it's interesting to think that Mercury in Aquarius is related to the Six of Swords, because again, speaking from a Mercury in Aquarius native, you know, we have the tendency to be like a little bit Hermione Granger and be like, yeah, I already know about that. It's Leviosa, you know, like we already know. So sometimes I think there's something about this retrograde, this Mercury retrograde in Aquarius, if we can picture it visually as the Six of Swords. It's almost like the Six of Swords, that boat in the Six of Swords is stopping, you know. And whoever's rowing that boat, I like to think of it actually as spirit, like it's sort of like a spirit guide who's rowing us into a new phase, right? Or like into a new realm. It's almost like the spirit guide who is rowing kind of stops and is like, all right, there's something to be realized, right, on this journey. Your time is up with whatever pattern that you've been in. Or, you know, sometimes you just have that. Like, your time is up. Your time is up with this pattern. Or your time is up with this behavior. Your time is up with this unconscious thing. And it's time to kind of become aware and move past it and face it in some way. Right. And it's almost like the boat's going to stop. Right. The boat's going to stop for 3 weeks when Mercury's in retrograde. Right. And what do we do when the boat stops? Right. Well, the shadowy Mercury in Aquarius kind of thing to do, you know, would be, there's nothing for me to look at. I already know everything, you know. I already got it under control. I don't need anybody else's perspective. I got it. I can see it all. It's all good. I'll just wait here with my arms crossed while this boat is stopped, and I'll just wait for you to start rowing again so I can get on with my journey, right? But, you know, the more evolved Mercury in Aquarius vibe, and again, I'm not just talking about people who have Mercury Aquarius in Aquarius. I'm talking about everybody in this astrological energy. The higher frequency, I think, of Mercury in Aquarius would be to examine that key phrase, I know, and maybe move in a little bit to that I don't know, right? Like kind of going into the almost opposite, the opposite frequency and kind of settling into the I don't know. And there's something about this boat stopping, if we can use this metaphor of the Six of Swords, because now we're like all in the Six of Swords together. We're all riding in it. Now it's stopped. Our spirit guide has stopped rowing. So we got some time. We got some time to just marinate here. And, you know, it's getting really quiet. And the sea, the water's really still. We can really hear ourselves. And I think in this moment, during this Mercury retrograde, we can really see very clearly what we have been resistant to or avoiding on the path, right? And that kind of brings me to the overall message of February, which is about resistance. I'm actually not sure what I'm going to call it yet. I might call it the path of resistance. And I was actually writing about this yesterday morning in my newsletter. So I already wrote like a little something about this. But I am noticing, I think there's a lot of opportunity in February, not only with Mercury retrograde in Aquarius, but also we have our first perfection of the Saturn-Uranus square on February 17th, which is also happening at 9 degrees Aquarius. Yeah, 9 degrees Aquarius, 9 degrees Taurus. So I think a lot of the astrology of February is kind of speaking to the path of resistance and meeting our resistance in a new way, which is funny because that's actually not what fixed sign energy wants to do, you know? And I think fixed signs, they have the stereotype of stubbornness, right? Like, especially Taurus, right? I would say that's, like, the stereotype of Taurus. But when it comes down to it, I feel like all the fixed signs have a little something, a little stubbornness in them. I don't think it's just Taurus. I think Leo, Aquarius, and Scorpio, especially Scorpio. You know, I think y'all, no offense, but you all have some of that resistance in there, but that's what it is. It's like what's deeper than stubbornness is resistance. And it's not only resistance to change, but it's kind of like almost a resistance to awareness. Because when we're kind of like resisting the next chapter or resisting the next thing to know, right? We're resisting the next batch of information that spirit's trying to deliver us. Sometimes then we get stuck, right? We get stuck. And I've heard this a lot, I think, this year. I've heard a lot of people say they feel stuck. And I've been thinking a lot about what we really mean when we say that, right? And I can't really speak for anybody else, but what I've noticed is that when I personally feel stuck in whatever, it's because I'm resistant. It's because I'm being resistant to a solution that I actually don't want. Because for some reason, my ego doesn't want that. You know, I actually want it this way, right? And again, that's very Mercury in Aquarius. So yeah, there's something about stuckness. I can't get out of this. I'm stuck. Well, when we're stuck, there's almost, I mean, I can't say this 100%, but like I would say 85% of the time, there's most likely something we're resisting / avoiding, right? There's something that needs to be faced that we're resisting or avoiding. I think this might kind of come from our trauma in a way, because I think sometimes, at least for me, you know, T, do you ever just catch yourself, like, you're like, man, like, I really wish Santa Claus would deliver me this solution. Or is that just the Pisces in me? I, like, you know, when that happens and you're like, wait a second, I'm literally stuck because I'm wishing Santa Claus would, like, give me the solution, right? And then you realize, oh, I'm resistant to actually going out and finding the solution myself, right? Or I'm avoiding taking responsibility for my own path in this moment, you know? So that could kind of be something worth thinking about when we're kind of in this boat, the Six of Swords boat, we're stopped in the middle of the lake or the middle of the river. You know, we might be just simply taking notice of what we're resistant to, right? And usually we hear the phrase, the path of the least resistance, which is fair. You know, I think there are some times in life where that's helpful. Yeah, what's the path of the least resistance? What's the easiest route? You know, like, truly, like, yeah, like, what's the easiest route? There's no shame in that. I think there's actually a time and a place to take the path of the least resistance, right? But this is actually not the month, in my opinion. Again, take what resonates, leave the rest. But from what I'm feeling intuitively from spirit, I'm actually getting the magic is the resistance in February. And you actually have meet more magic and have more breakthroughs if you actually kind of walk the path of resistance this month. And I was kind of thinking, here we go with my definitions. Yeah, let's just, you know, it's just tradition. We gotta read the definition of whatever word. I'm kind of obsessed with how we don't actually know what words mean. If that makes sense. Like, I feel like we just use, I'm just kind of obsessed with language, like how language actually works. So resistance, according to Google Dictionary, the refusal to accept or comply with something. Okay, listen to that again. Resistance, the refusal to accept or comply with something. That's, like, how many of you guys knew that's what resistance means? Like, I didn't know. I obviously know what resistant means, but I didn't know that's the definition of it. So that kind of helped me because I was thinking, well, when I feel resistant, I'm actually refusing to accept or comply with something. You know, which is pretty powerful, right? And we could be resistant to a whole bunch of shit on our spiritual path, quote unquote. I know that sounds cheesy, but I don't know what else to call it. I think meeting resistance, walking the path of resistance, is actually a really important part of the spiritual path. And I don't know one person who's never met resistance on the path. Like, I don't know. I almost feel like sometimes the more I examine my conditioning, the more resistance I have. Because it's almost like you're seeing more and you're like kind of feeling more into like your conditioning, why you behave the way that you do, you know, the roots of your trauma. And it's almost like, yeah, sometimes it's like you see the truth of that and then you almost become resistant to it, right? Because I think it's sort of like the sort of tug of war between the ego and the soul, you know, not to demonize the ego, because I'm not into that either. But yeah, like I think it's a month to really ask ourselves, what's the definition again? Yeah, to really ask ourselves, have I been refusing to accept or comply with something? And again, this is probably not material. This is probably not in the physical world. let me make that clear. This is probably internal, right? Like, is there something that needs to be accepted? Is there something that needs to, is there something that needs to be accepted so you can move forward? Let's read the definition of avoidance. The action of keeping away from or not doing something. Again, the action of keeping away from or not doing something, right? So I think like resistance and avoidance kind of go hand in hand. They're not completely the same thing, but I think sometimes they're like fraternal twins. Like, you know, if we have one, we probably have the other. I'll give you an example from my own life of resistance that I've faced recently. And I actually have a better example that's a little bit more vulnerable that I'm not going to share because I get paranoid that like I don't want to trauma bond with people. You know, do you ever think about that? So I do have like, I will say maybe I'll talk about this in a future episode, but not right now. So I'm going to go with more of like the low risk example, but it still is personal. Just to kind of give you a little bit more about what I'm saying. Something that I used to do pretty early on in sort of my spiritual path was yoga. This was something that I talked about, I think, like, probably in the first season of Horoscope Witch. I think I talked a lot about, like, doing yoga and how at one point I did enjoy it in some way. Like, I always really hate yoga in the moment, you know? but afterwards, there was something about it that I enjoyed the ritual of going to the studio, being in the class, et cetera, right? Back when we could go out in public, right? So there was a point, though, where the yoga journey for me went to a halt, came to a halt, because what was happening, actually, was I would be in these classes and certain poses, I would just like burst into tears. I know I'm not the only one who's experienced this. And it wouldn't even be about anything. Like, it would just be this like random, like, burst of emotion coming up. And again, I know I'm not the only one who's experienced this. In fact, I feel like I've spoken to a lot of people who know what I'm saying. So yeah, just like this random like pocket of emotion just like release, and I would be like crying. And that then kind of yoga kind of became uncomfortable because I'm a Pisces, you know, I have a lot of Pisces placements. So I particularly don't enjoy, although stereotype of Pisces is like we cry a lot. I don't particularly enjoy like being in a yoga class with like other people and like crying, you know, like that's not something that I love. So I kind of like put the brakes on yoga for like a really long time now. I have not done it in a really long time because you know what happened? I actually became resistant and avoidant of what was actually coming up in the sessions, right? Because that emotion, although it kind of felt like it was coming out of nowhere, it actually wasn't coming out of nowhere, right? Like, there was something attached to that emotion. There might have been, like, a memory to be explored or a feeling or something to be acknowledged, right? But in that moment, I'm still avoidant and resistant to going back to that place with yoga because there's something about it that's kind of, yeah, I'm avoiding it. I'm like, I don't want to deal with that, right? Like, I would prefer not to. I already know. Leviosa, I don't need to, like, you know, like that kind of thing. So I'm thinking that whatever is in there, right, that I'm avoiding is probably really important if I'm avoiding it this hard. Right? Because sometimes the thing that we are avoiding and resisting really hard ends up being really important. And it actually sometimes ends up being, I don't know, the solution to something. But I think sometimes we just don't want the solution, right? Or sometimes we just don't want that thing to be the solution, or we don't want that to be the answer. So we just avoid it and we resist it, right? So we're kind of already seeing here with this Mercury retrograde. It's, again, this is why it's a little bit of a shadowy one, but that's why I said in the beginning it's kind of exciting, because I think by the end of this, if you are able to invite and look at resistance / avoidance this month, I think it actually will be really rewarding in the way of this Mercury retrograde having a potential to lead you to a place where you feel less stuck, or you're feeling less unmotivated or feeling less whatever, stagnant. But it's only for those who are kind of willing to have a conversation with this resistance, right? And I'm thinking too, how difficult healing can be, right? I mean, it's a really hard thing. It's a really hard thing to, like, go to yoga and cry. It's a really hard thing to, like, go to therapy. It's a really hard thing to, like, go see a healer and open up your heart and talk about something, you know? And I think that's sometimes why we're resistant to certain things, too. I'm thinking what I was kind of meditating on was that, yes, we're being invited to sit with resistance or sit with what we've been avoiding this month. But I was also asking spirit, like, what is an accessible way to do this in a way that's not overwhelming, right? Because again, if you're resistant and avoidant of whatever it is that you need to do, or whatever it is deep down that you know you would like to explore, the big, like, biting off a huge piece is never going to be doable, right? Because, like, resistance and avoidance, something that spirit was saying, they were kind of showing me crumbs, and they were like, we need crumbs, not big bites, crumbs. So the idea I had here from what spirit was communicating, I wrote down here, if you're stuck, start doing small things you've been avoiding. So I wrote down, like, small, really low-risk things that you've been avoiding. So cleaning out the closet, taking a bag of clothes to donation, cleaning your makeup brushes, paying off a bill, right? Going to the store and buying a canvas. You know, let's say you've been resistant to a painting project that you want to do, right? Like, maybe it's just about getting in the car, going to the store, buying the canvas, right? And I was thinking of how these little things, these, like, very trivial things, like, oh, I'm going to finally call and get the dishwasher fixed, or I'm going to finally dust my bookshelf, I'm going to finally organize my crystals, you know, like, whatever, like, trivial little thing. I'm getting that it can kind of catapult us into bigger things, and it kind of can build our resilience, because we need some resilience to actually look at the thing that we're avoiding or resisting. So, you know, maybe just bring in that, if you can, I would invite you, because this is what I'm going to be doing in February. They might invite in maybe like 5 minutes of avoidance a day, especially during this Mercury retrograde, in the way of, I'm maybe going to invite in 5 minutes of just like, all right, in this 5 minutes, I will complete a task that I've been avoiding, and kind of working my way up. And who knows, I'm not going to put this expectation on me, but I may come back in March and report that those 5 minutes of doing those little things that I was avoiding actually then somehow catapulted me into an online yoga class that I've been meaning to go to for 10 months now, right? Like, I just don't know, right? But that's kind of where I'm feeling. And I feel like this month has the power to take us there in a really healing way. Okay. All right, let me see my notes here. Yeah. Okay, the other thing, I'm trying to read some things that I wrote down in my, like, after I meditated. I said, sometimes the solution is the exact thing you've been avoiding this entire time. It's the answer you didn't want to hear. It's exactly what you've been resisting all along. It's the compromise or the sacrifice you didn't want to do. It's just way harder than you expected. so there's just some things I wrote down, but I think these are like real emotions that many of us are having right now, and I think there's kind of magic too in saying yes to the solution that you didn't necessarily want this month, and it might not present itself until the end of Mercury retrograde, right? We've got a good 3 weeks of playing with this resistance, avoidance kind of theme. We have about 3 weeks of being in the Six of Swords boat that's just kind of sitting in the water and not going much, going places. But again, by the time Mercury stations direct on February 20th, and by the time Mercury kind of comes out of its shadow, I think there could be some real breakthroughs with certain things that we've been avoiding. And something I've also realized too, that it's a great, 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 great relief to actually finally face the thing that we've been avoidant or resistant to, right? It becomes this like beautiful catalyst for getting unstuck and moving to a new energy. Okay. The one last thing I wanted to say too on the sermon was that on the topic of resistance and avoidance, I think we may be seeing more of that energy in the collective, in the sense of, I don't know, like, I think we might see a lot of kind of like putting our foot down kind of energy, or like enough is enough kind of, even though we've been in this for like 5 years, right? There might kind of be this reckoning collectively, maybe even politically, socially, with what has been resistant, or what we have been resistant of, the change we have been resistant of, what we have been avoiding for way, way, way too long, certain reparations that I think we have really needed to make as a society. I'm getting that this energy that I'm speaking of in the individual is also going to show up collectively in some way. So I would also invite you to look at the story of resistance and avoidance in our, let's say, political scheme, our collective scheme. You know, sometimes looking at other people's avoidance, not in a judgmental way, but I think sometimes we can see other people's avoidance or other people's resistance in a much more clear way than we can see our own, right? So I'm not necessarily inviting us to, like, you know, judge our friends or judge our parents or judge the people around us, but it'd be interesting to kind of like notice just how easily sometimes we can see other people's resistance and avoidance. Like, you know, like if you right now took stock of your, you know, top five best friends or whatever, you could probably name one thing that all of them are resistant or avoidant of, you know, or like whatever. And, you know, it's easy, right? And it's just not that easy for us. Because you know why? Because when we actually face what we're being resistant to, when we actually go down the path of resistance and we examine our avoidance, that's when the new pattern happens. And that's why it's so scary, Right. So I hope this message wasn't too heavy. I hopefully didn't doomsday Mercury retrograde. Hopefully I made it sound ex not that I'm trying to make it sound like exciting in a like fake way or a not authentic way, because I'm real with you guys, but I kind of wanted to communicate just how exciting the shift could potentially be, depending on what you're willing to sit with. And if this message doesn't resonate quite yet, leave it in your back pocket, and we'll see how Mercury retrograde kind of marinates over time. And I am in full agreement that everybody who's listening has some kind of breakthrough, some kind of shift, some kind of unstuckness, some kind of realization, some kind of profound Six of Swords moment in February that can help steer your direction for the rest of 2021. Okay, my friends, let me know if this resonated if you want. Tweet me, Instagram me. I like to hear from you. I like to chat with you for a little bit. And we'll end the sermon and then we'll go into the February Q&A. All right, friends, let's hop in to the February Q&A. As always, if you have any questions about spirituality, astrology, tarot, mental health, relationships, personal development, really self-care, really anything you could think of, even any personal questions you want to ask me, send them to Instagram, send them to my Twitter, send them to my email, because I collect these questions throughout the month and then I answer them anonymously on this segment. Okay, let's get it. So our first question is about chart patterns. And if you're unfamiliar with what chart patterns are, it's really just this idea that the planets in our chart form different shapes slash patterns in our natal chart. And depending on how the planets are positioned or situated throughout different houses or throughout different houses, the planets can kind of make different patterns in our chart. And the general idea is that depending on which pattern you have, this could kind of influence your personality or your psyche. I had to look this up. I was like thinking about this question just to elaborate on chart patterns. And I was like, there's no way this is Hellenistic or even medieval. I was thinking like it's got to be pretty modern. And I looked it up and it turns out that the astrologer Mark Edmund Jones was actually the one who kind of came up with this and identified the seven chart patterns. And from my understanding, when I was kind of learning about the seven chart patterns, I was taught that you don't take into account the asteroids or the nodes. So you're really just looking at the 10 main planets and kind of seeing how they form shapes and patterns. So I won't really go into great depth into all seven patterns, just because this is actually not a technique that I typically use. But just to kind of review all of them really briefly, there's the locomotive pattern, which is when your planets are taking up about two-thirds of your chart. And then there's the bowl shape. So it literally looks like a bowl because the planets are taking up just one single side of your chart. There's the splash pattern, which is kind of complicated to explain in a visual way, but the splash pattern is literally kind of like there is no pattern, just the planets are sort of splashed all over your chart, not creating a particular shape. There's the seesaw pattern, which is when sort of half the planets in your chart are sort of located on one side and then the other half are located on the other, literally creating sort of a seesaw pattern. Then there's the bucket shape, which I personally have a bucket chart, and this is sort of when we have the bowl shape, so we have most of the planets creating that bowl in like one half of the chart, but then to have the bucket, you have one planet sort of across the bowl, and it kind of creates this handle. And then we have the splay, which is kind of when we have almost like three spots in the chart sort of forming a trine, where all of the planets are kind of spurred or collected in these three single spots, so almost creating like a triangle. And then finally there's the bundle, which is sort of like a smaller bowl. So while the planets in a bowl chart will take up about half of one side of the natal chart, the planets in a bundle chart will kind of take up even a smaller amount of the chart, maybe even like one third of the chart. So all 10 planets are collected within like one, two, or three different houses. And then we kind of get into, well, what does it mean if I have a bowl chart? What does it mean if I have a bucket chart? What does it mean if I have a bundle? I don't actually feel called to get into every single like nuanced thing about the chart patterns just because I'm not an expert. I will link a really good article that I just found on astro.com about the different chart patterns if you kind of want to look more into this. But I will say that the one chart pattern that I do kind of notice right off the bat is if someone has this sort of bundle shape, like all of their planets are sort of like clustered within two or three houses, that's something that I'll notice right off the bat. And this is just kind of an example, but people with bowl charts, people with bundled charts and bowl charts, but bundled charts specifically, people with bundled charts typically have kind of, because they intrinsically have a lot of conjunctions and stelliums. And when we have a person with a lot of conjunctions, we have a person with like a great amount of intensity and focus. And there's usually kind of this like great drive or passion behind people with bundled charts. And there's just like this just focus. I don't know how else to put it. Like they're just focused. And we can kind of see that in the chart shape, right? Because if we look at a bundle chart, all of these planets, all 10 planets, are literally focused within two or three houses. So they're all kind of clustered together, speaking to a certain area of life. Of course, in that case, we're kind of also having to take into account which houses the planets are actually clustered in. But then there's an idea, if we have a bowl or a bundle chart and we have all of our planets clustered on one side or within a couple different houses, then there's also this idea that the other half of the chart is empty, right? So then there's this other part of this chart pattern where it's like, okay, the other half of the chart is empty, so maybe these areas are harder for the person to connect with or whatever. I mean, again, I'm not entirely sure if I completely buy into the sort of philosophy behind chart patterns, but I will say that like that bundle shape I definitely notice as an astrologer right off the bat. Or let's say if someone had the seesaw shape, let's say they have five of their planets in the first house and five of their other planets in the seventh house, like, I'm definitely going to notice that, right? And I'm definitely going to think, okay, well, the seesaw shape, we have a person who might be inherently torn between two things, right? Like, or sort of inherently sort of divided internally between this interest or that interest, or they feel this sort of juxtaposition within them, this great conflict. Maybe they're sort of having this never-ending internal conflict because they have this seesaw pattern in their chart. But again, like, this isn't, I don't really necessarily think that we see certain patterns very often. I was reading a little bit more about what it means to have a bucket chart, because I remember my first astrologer, or my first astrology teacher, putting a lot of emphasis on my chart having a bucket shape. And my first astrology teacher is very much like a modern astrologer. So this was a technique that he really used in his own practice. And in my own chart, I have all of my major planets clustered in the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th house. So that kind of creates the bowl, right? So we have the bowl shape across the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th house. But then I have Mars in my 2nd house. So Mars kind of becomes the handle of the bowl. And what I was kind of remembering about what he was saying about this was sort of like, Mars is, because it's the handle of my bowl, Mars is kind of like, almost like dragging ass. Like, it's sort of like Mars is like always kind of having a different focus, or like has its own agenda sort of separate from my planets that are in the bowl. And Mars kind of creates its own focus. And I don't know, like, I don't know if I kind of resonate with that. And that kind of goes into, interestingly enough, kind of the more Hellenistic interpretation of my chart, which would be that because I was born during the day, Mars is my out of sect malefic. So Mars is sort of the toughest planet in my chart because I was born during the day. So, and Mars is retrograde in my chart too. So, like, it's interesting that in Hellenistic astrology, Mars is kind of my challenge. And also in this sort of more modern take, if we're interpreting my chart as a bucket, still, like, Mars kind of remains the sort of troublemaker in a way in my chart. So I don't know, I thought I'd just add that in just because there's so many ways to interpret one chart. And I often think that a lot of different ways that we interpret charts will eventually lead us to the same outcome in a lot of different ways. So yeah, check out the link below, that astro.com link below, if this is sort of sparking your interest and you want to kind of look more into what chart pattern your own chart is making and what it actually means. The one other thing I'll say is that chart patterns do come into account too when we're looking at transits, because if we think about, let's go back to the example of someone having a bundle chart, so they have all 10 of their planets, let's say, in the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd house. What this means then, when this person is going through a really major transit, it's almost like their transits hitting everything at once, if that makes sense. So there also might be this feeling in life of having, like, everything coming crashing down all at once within a couple years. And then there's, like, this kind of period of calm and not so much action. So I think that's sometimes where the chart pattern matters too. We're not only taking into account how it influences this person's psyche, but then we're also taking into account how the chart pattern, like, mathematically sort of works when we're going through a transit. And I think I'm not the only astrologer who's described transits as sort of dominoes. So it's almost like when when a planet is aspecting, a transiting planet is aspecting a natal planet, it's sort of like it's knocking down a domino in a way, and then that planet knocks down another domino, and so it's almost like this domino effect. Okay, I hope that made sense. I feel like that made no sense, but it's a little bit hard to explain this concept too, because it's a very visual concept. So again, if this is sparking your interest, please check out the link that I'll put below. Okay, so someone also asked another astrology question, and they asked, what does Aries love life look like for the year, specifically for those in relationships? And I'm not going to answer this question, but I'm still going to use this question as a kind of good example of what astrologers really do when they're answering these like kind of specific questions. Like, what does my love life look like for the year ahead? I will say that it's sort of like a common misunderstanding that we can know, like, it's a common misunderstanding that we would know what your love life would look like for the year ahead just by your sun sign, you know? Whereas I think that's when we're really getting into the technicalities of astrology, we're looking at a lot of different things. It's definitely not just the sun sign. First and foremost, we actually, I think, are going to look at the rising sign, because the rising sign is going to influence sort of what house you're having your transits in, and your rising sign is what sets up your whole chart. Your rising sign is what sets up where your fifth house and seventh house is, and the fifth house is the house of romance, and the seventh house is the house of relationships. So again, when we're asking these questions, what does my love life look like this year if I'm an Aries? Like a technical astrologer is going to be like, I don't know. I don't know. I have to see your whole chart. But I thought it'd be fun to kind of talk a little bit about, like, as an astrologer, someone comes to an appointment and asks me, what does my love life look like this year? What am I actually looking at? And one thing that I'm going to look at is fifth house, seventh house transits, because again, like I said before, the fifth house is typically associated with romance, and the seventh house is associated with partnerships. So first I'm going to look like, all right, are there any major transits that this person is going to go through this year in those houses? And maybe thinking about how this could potentially influence love or a deepening of a relationship kind of coming into their life, if that makes sense. Like, for instance, if someone, this is just a random example, but let's say someone comes to an appointment and says, I'm thinking about proposing to my girlfriend. Is this a good time to like sort of deepen my relationship? And let's say they have Saturn. Saturn just moved into their seventh house. I'm going to say, yeah, I mean, Saturn moving into the seventh house, there's almost this new responsibility and this newfound deepening of the relationship and this newfound commitment. So Saturn, the seventh house, could be a deepening of the commitment, right? Now, here's another example. Let's say someone comes to an appointment and says, I really want to break up with my partner. It's just not working. What in the chart is speaking to this? Let's use another Saturn example. Let's say they have Saturn just moved into their seventh house. Well, Saturn can be a little bit of like a make it or break it kind of transit. So I'm going to think, and I'm going to be looking at that and seeing, yeah, you know, Saturn has just entered into your seventh house. There might be a feeling that if you are not serious or you're not committed, fully committed to this person anymore, then there could be this feeling that things have to be let go and sort of shed for you to move on with your soul's path, right? So that's just an example of what an astrologer can do when we have the full picture and we have more information than just the sun sign. And when it comes down to it, sometimes the sun sign really doesn't have much to do with it unless the sun is the ruler of the fifth house or the seventh house. Then we could look at that. But the other thing I was thinking of, two things that could indicate love or romance in a person's life, maybe Mars or Venus specifically being aspected by an outer planet. So let's say your Venus is, you know, let's say, yeah, you have Venus in Capricorn, okay? And let's say Pluto is in Capricorn now, and let's say Pluto is about to form a conjunction with your natal Venus. This could speak to, like, sort of a very intense relationship, maybe blossoming in some way. We're looking at Mars, Venus, and in your own chart, and our Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, Pluto. Am I forgetting someone? Jupiter, are those planets aspecting Venus and Mars in your chart? And what does that mean, right, for you? So, yeah, there's a lot of different things that we could look at when it comes to what does my love life look like this year? and shameless self-promotion, but I will be, I'm going to still keep my year ahead readings open in February just because I like to do year ahead readings. So if this is a question that you have on your mind and you want to talk about your love life in the year ahead or your career or whatever it is, my year ahead astrology readings are still up on my website under book a session. Okay, let's move on to the next question. How would you say that you personally find balance with astrology in regards to knowing the transits and how it will affect you but not letting it take over? Okay. So I believe this was asked by another astrologer / astrology student. So this person is more on like an intermediate advanced level of astrology like I am. But I think I'm really glad this person asked this question because it's something that I struggle with too. Like as an astrologer, as someone who quote unquote knows what's coming a little bit, or like has some insider trading information, and you kind of see like, oh man, like this is coming for me, and like what's gonna happen, it can be really anxiety inducing and something that one of my favorite astrologers is Chris Brennan. I've told you guys, I'm completing Chris Brennan's Hellenistic astrology class right now. And something that I've heard him say in various astrology podcasts is like this idea that beginner astrologers like myself, people who are kind of still developing their knowledge and skill, it's sort of like as astrologers, you become your first guinea pig. So it's almost like, I don't know, like being a tattoo artist, and like in order to practice, like you're giving yourself the tattoo because like no one like, so it's kind of like that when you're an astrologer, like you become your guinea pig and then you sort of start maybe being a little bit obsessive in the ways that you're sort of tracking certain transits because we're trying to learn, right? And I think this is actually a really good way if you're looking to get deeper into astrology, even just tracking where the moon is in your chart every single day can kind of help you learn. But of course, I totally emphasize with this idea that like the more advanced you get, it's almost like the more potential information that you have, to work with, and thus maybe the more anxiety that that's sort of causing, because we have this tool that can really lead us into completely into the future. Like, for instance, this sounds kind of silly, but I'm like, like, I'm like, oh my God, like, I already see that when I'm like 45, like my opposition Uranus is going to happen in my first and seventh house. So I'm already planning for my divorce during then. Like, you know, like, I'm like 25 and I'm like already seeing something that's going to happen to me when I'm 45. And I'm like kind of freaking out, you know, and we can really go down this rabbit hole. And something that I've kind of come to recently, granted, this is after a year of 2020, especially me being pretty meticulous in the way that I was tracking my transits and thus causing myself a vast amount of anxiety. I've kind of come to the conclusion that it's sometimes really hard to do surgery on yourself, right? So especially when you're an astrologer, I would say don't assume that you know what's coming for you, right? As an astrologer, I make the worst, most ominous, dark predictions for my own life, right? More like, and I would never say anything. I would never dream of saying anything, half of the stuff that I think to myself, to someone else, right? Because we're always the harshest judge on our own chart and our own transits, right? So again, the sort of thing that I've come to recently is that if I am worried or anxious about something in my own chart that's coming up, I now am going to go somewhere else. Like, I'm going to go and consult another astrologer because there is this just self-awareness that we have to have. Like, all right, if I'm catastrophizing my divorce or I think I'm going to die tomorrow, then I'm probably wrong and I probably need a second opinion. And then it's funny because then when you go to another astrologer that you trust, and yes, by the way, just like therapists need to go to therapy themselves, right? Astrologers in some way should be getting readings from other astrologers to learn about themselves and learn about how other astrologers do readings, etc., etc. So then you go to the other astrologer and you're like, yeah, I'm definitely going to die tomorrow. And they're like, no, but here's what I'm seeing. This is actually a la-di-da-di-da-di-da. And you're like, oh, fuck, yeah, you're right. Like, you know, so that would be my advice. If you are an advanced astrology student or a professional astrologer like I am, and you're kind of using yourself as a guinea pig, that's fine. But know where your line is and know where really kind of humble yourself and be like, actually, I have no idea what could potentially come about. You know, astrologers are just educated guessers. We're not like the voice of God. So if you feel too biased about a certain transit that is coming up, by all means, go get the second opinion. Don't try to handle it yourself and cause yourself a mass amount of anxiety. Okay. One thing I wanted to say too, just in general, I was thinking about how much of an immense responsibility it is to have astrological information, you know, and I'm thinking about how it's an immense responsibility of how we actually end up communicating that to people and to ourselves. So like really kind of facing that responsibility of having some quote-unquote insider information and facing it in a really gentle and humble way and not in an irresponsible way. And I think sometimes I've been irresponsible with my own with sort of interpreting my own transits in a way that were kind of catastrophic. And after the catastrophe didn't happen, I was like, oh man, yeah, I was really kind of irresponsible with the way I was handling that information, and I was wrong, right? So being mindful too of like having some kind of balance or equilibrium when we're looking at our own shit. Okay, I hope that helped. I like this question. This next question is, what are your go-to crystal recommendations at the moment? I love this question. I'm big into crystal healing. I will say that my three crystals that I use pretty much every day are orange calcite, blue calcite, and malachite. And I specifically really like calcites because they're super, super gentle. And I really like malachite because malachite is sort of this like magnet almost, I feel. It's like this really intense, beautiful stone that I think can really, like my intuitive feeling about malachite is it sort of just like sucks out like a lot of like bad juju and kind of like transmutes it and turns it into abundance, if that makes sense. So when I say I do crystal healing on myself almost every day, what does that mean? It's super easy. Really at night, like when I'm winding down and I'm just watching like Netflix or reading or whatever, what I'll do specifically, and this is especially if I've seen clients that day, because part of my cleansing after clients is to do crystal healing. What I'll do is I put the orange calcite on my sacral chakra. I put the malachite on my solar plexus because your solar plexus is sort of like your psychic center. So, and then I put a blue calcite on my throat chakra, and I'll just kind of let those sit for about an hour while I'm watching Netflix or whatever. And I kind of give myself a little bit of like a crystal healing. I'm also a big fan of fluorite. Fluorite's probably my favorite crystal. However, fluorite is something that I use almost throughout the day, like while I'm recording a podcast or while I'm working with a client, because there's something about fluorite that keeps me energized and focused. Overall, I will also put this recommendation in the show notes. Maybe I'll have this person on the podcast one day, but I'm a big fan of Krista Mitchell on YouTube. Her crystal healing videos have taught me a lot. And if you're interested in more about like how to do crystal healing on yourself, I really, really like her information. So I'll also put that in the show notes. I highly recommend her YouTube channel. And lastly, we also have a question. What is a good way to help regulate overwork? And do you have advice for self-care? Yeah, this is a tough one. How to regulate overwork. I think it's funny because like the anecdote to overwork is self-care, rest, knowing how to nurture yourself. So like the first thing that comes to mind is like if we're struggling repeatedly with overwork and burnout, sure, is this a byproduct of like our capitalistic society? You know, absolutely. I don't necessarily think humans, I don't think our evolutionary purpose is to work like 12 hours a day, you know? So like, it's like no wonder why we're exhausted. Well, like right now in the current circumstance that we're working in, it's sort of this this idea that like it's intrinsically burning us out because we're doing things every day that are not what we're evolutionarily meant to do, right? In like more of an animalistic caveman kind of way, humans are meant to be spending time in nature, collecting their food, being in relationship with one another, connecting to their group or their tribe. And like the capitalistic society that we live in today doesn't really allow us the time or the space to do that. One moment. My computer is running out of battery. 1 minute. Can we... Sorry, guys. I'm gonna edit this. Or will I edit this? Probably not. Let's just take a drink of water. take a quick break. Okay. Boom. Okay, we got it. And I think that's something to acknowledge. Like, our overwork and our exhaustion and our burnout isn't entirely our fault, okay? But here's where we do have control, I think, is learning to know, like, learning a little bit more about ourselves and what it really means to what we as individuals, as souls, as bodies, as spirits, what do we truly need to feel nurtured and rested and cared for? And this answer will vary depending on who you are, right? And something that I recently realized, very recently, and this was actually in an astrology reading that I had, shout out to Kelsey Rose, I recently had a reading with her, and I actually went to her with this kind of exact question. I was like, what do I need to self-care? And it's interesting because we can ask our birth chart this, like, what is it that I specifically need to feel rested and cared for? And I have a Pisces moon, so we talked a lot about how truly what I need to feel rested is to do absolutely nothing. Like, I like to go for nature walks and be in relationship with trees and flowers and the ground and all of this. So that does rejuvenate me. But when it really comes down to it, nothing is more restorative to me than just like fucking doing nothing and just like watching Netflix for like 5 hours and not looking at my email or my phone. And what I kind of realized when I was talking to Kelsey in this session was that there's an inherent guilt that I carry associated with the things that actually restore me, right? So this sort of guilt of like, well, if I'm not doing anything and I'm like being a lazy piece of shit and I'm like watching Netflix for like 5 hours on my day off, like what am I doing with my life? And there was like such this guilt and this shame over doing what truly restores me in a lot of ways. And also there's a part of me that's like, well, you know, shouldn't what restores me, shouldn't that be like yoga or like a meditation, a 1 hour meditation, or doing like a bunch of like, I don't know, breath work or whatever? Like, shouldn't what restores me be more quote-unquote spiritual, and shouldn't it be like more romantic? Like, I think I was really romanticizing what self-care and restoration meant for me, when at the end of the day it's really just like doing nothing and like zoning out and being a Pisces moon and going into my cave and just feeling like I don't have to do anything, answer to anybody, or be anywhere for just like a day, right? So once I got over, once I'm still kind of in this process, but I'm kind of getting over the guilt or the shame or the sort of conditioning when it comes to doing what I truly need to do for myself to restore myself, right? So I say that because I think sometimes when we, again, constantly feel overworked or exhausted or burnt out, maybe there is a question of what truly restores me, but do I feel guilt for doing what truly restores me? Man, like capitalism and the patriarchy really does fuck us up, right? And I know too, in my ancestral lineage, there's like this massive rest shame, like totally, like that's something I grew up with, like it was shameful to rest or to be doing nothing. So I get it. Now, one other thing I will say too is that when it comes to what really restores us, so we kind of are veering away from overwork and exhaustion and burnout, and we're veering towards self-care and self-nurturing, something that could maybe help you, if you're listening, is looking into your moon sign, because the moon sign in our natal chart isn't just about our emotions and our feelings. The moon sign is what we need, how we feel nurtured, how we nurture others, but yeah, also what we need to feel nurtured and rejuvenated. So looking into your moon sign and kind of asking your moon sign, like, what does this sign truly need to feel rejuvenated? Because again, like, the answer might be surprising to you. So that would be my take. And I think that's about it, my friends. Those are all of the questions for February. I hope you enjoyed this segment. I love doing the Q&As, so thank you for sending me your questions. I really appreciate it. I'm trying to think if there's anything I need to announce before I go. I would say, just in general, my February books are open. So astrology readings, tarot readings, distance Reiki healings, those are all open. If you've been needing to book or you've been curious about booking, those are on my website, MalloryHasty.com, in the show notes. The other thing that I announced last moon sermon, monthly sermon, was that my tarot course is open for enrollment. So we start a new cohort called the Magicians on March 13th. This is a 8 to 9 week tarot course. It's really like this sort of intensive immersion. We really build our knowledge from the ground up. So if you've been looking for a tarot course and you want to read more about mine starting in March, I would love to have you. At this point, we've got just over half of the slots filled, and I have about 5 openings left. So there's still some time, and I do advertise the class pretty early so people have time to think about it and read about it and et cetera, et cetera. So there's still time, and there's still a different payment plans, and there's a price for the LGBTQI and BIPOC community too. So you can check that out. I tried to make the pricing relatively accessible. And yeah, that's it, my friends. I'll be back again in February for, I don't know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I plan to release, hopefully, one more podcast in February. And I'm excited, too, for the death and rebirth coming in March. Thank you so much for listening, my friends. I'll talk to you soon.